Welcome to Lubbock, Tom Frame, Kara Frame. Thank you so much for sitting down with us for our podcast series, For the Pages. Tom, firstly, if this feels appropriate to you, I want to thank you for your service to our country. Can you briefly recount the circumstances of and your mission in August 68 and how it played out?
I was with a mechanized unit, armored personnel carriers. Our mission that day was a search and destroy in the Benkui rubber plantation. We knew that we thought there was about a company of North Vietnamese regulars. We walked into an ambush of a regiment and more, which is numbers 2,500 to 3,000. The battle didn't last very long. We got overrun. My best recollection of the day was trying to get wounded out, trying to get people that were dead out. We couldn't get everybody out. We got pulled out of the rubber plantation, and of course we had left some bodies in there, and you don't do that. We couldn't get back in. We tried to get some help from other units in the area. We couldn't get them in there. We couldn't go back in. We tried to get back in on August 22nd. We got whacked again. On August 23rd, when we went back in, nobody was around. It was the most peaceful day. The sun shining down through the rubber plantation trees. It was peaceful and so quiet. It was eerie. And we retrieved all of our men.
Did the trauma of you losing your comrades, did that start right away? And has it changed through the years?
It didn't start right away because coming from a squad leader, they put me in charge of the platoon, which is a lot more men. So you're pretty busy. It was there, remembering the men. It wasn't until after I got home. And after I got home in 69, got married, had children. And I thought about it until I got involved in Veterans Affairs. But I think about the men every day. Every day I wake up, I look out the window, and I still wonder why me, why I was left. I didn't get a scratch that day. A week and a half later, I got hurt.
The manifestations of the trauma, the post-stress, what did that look like? Was there substance abuse? Was there depression, survivor's guilt, anger?
All of it. When I came home, I tried to make up for that year. A lot of us did, through drugs and alcohol. I woke up one day and I thought, I'm going to kill myself. And I probably should have been dead from Vietnam, but why should I do it here? But the anger, I think, is the biggest thing with PTSD.
Disproportional to
absolutely.
The situation.
Absolutely, yes. And I didn't really know what was going on at the time within my own head. My brother-in-law, who served in Vietnam the year after I was there, we would sit around drinking cold refreshments, and we would talk about Vietnam, and we didn't realize that was the start of our healing process, because he knew what I was talking about, and I knew what he was talking about. So that's really a lot where I got started, and then I got involved in Veterans Affairs. I've met some of the guys I served with in Vietnam, which is really a tremendous lift for me. But I still think, I still have the guilt feeling, but I've read so much about it, and that's okay to have the guilt feeling.
Kara, how did your dad's PTSD, which wasn't recognized until 1980, impact the upbringing of yourself and your siblings?
So PTSD wasn't recognized till 1980, but when were you diagnosed?
I don't remember.
I have no idea. Which is funny because people ask me that, and they ask me I ask other adult children, when did you realize your father had PTSD? And they couldn't answer it. And then I was, thinking, God, could I even answer that? And I have no idea. I think I remember, maybe 13, 15 years ago, I was late teens, early 20s, hearing that term, but not really understanding it. So I say all of that to give you an idea of growing up with him. I mean, he was just my dad. And I thought all dads would get angry. And, like, they do. All dads get angry. But it's the intensity of the anger and how it would be the flip of a switch. And I actually, when I was doing the documentary, I also took a book design class. And I created a book about what it was like growing up with my father. And it's these memories. And it's conversations throughout my life where it was like little things that now when I look back, I realize that it was, could have informed me at that point, but I was too young to understand that that was PTSD and that was what it's like to be a veteran's daughter. You know, friends not understanding Memorial Day, friends not understanding, I mean, this is kind of weird, but my dad doesn't have hair on, like, the bottom half of his legs, and I always thought it was because of his boots in Vietnam, rubbing the hair off. So I just, like, would tell my friends that. But that's, like, something that's just, like, weird and kind of unique to, like, veterans' daughters, where you make up these stories in your head. But also, even when I was in my early 20s and there was a cat, our cat that passed away and was unfortunately attacked by a bigger animal. And she ended up, I didn't see her, but bloody in our garage. And that my mom, when I saw her first thing that morning, she was like, "Hey, make sure you give your father space. He found Dawn dead in the garage," and it sent him into a flashback. And it's just like understanding that there are times where you have to back up, and like in those moments he couldn't be my dad because he needed to be a recovering soldier, and like having to give him that space. So it's just a different perspective. It's all the same things. He's still my dad. He was there for so many things. He supported me in all these ways. But just like mostly just the anger and stuff is what I really remember is when I look back, it's like, oh, I get it now.
Any learned behavior from growing up around that?
I have anger issues for sure. I'm somebody that I've worked really hard. I've overcome my own trauma in my life and have done therapy. I've found ways that bring me, I've found hobbies that bring me comfort and stress release, and it's really important to continue using those. But even when I don't always use my tools and my toolbox for, you know, any challenging situations, sometimes, I mean, I will have weird anger things where it's like, I live in a group house in Washington, D.C., which is really common, and, you know, it's like when people don't take the trash out, you know, it's not that big of a deal, but I can't even believe that they couldn't take the trash out. And it's like, it's irrational sometimes.
Was his irrational often too?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would be a light left on. Or it would be, you know, when my brother, when we were younger, if we were disrespectful, it was like, we should have been put in our place. But I do think that sometimes the anger was irrational. But as much as I've learned that behavior from him, I've also learned to recognize it because I recognized it in him and now I can recognize it in myself. And there's a lot of times where I'm just like, Kara, just walk away from the trash can because this is irrational right now, and like come back to it when you can calm down. You know, it's taught me a lot.
Okay, Tom, back to you. People weren't savvy about the effects of war on soldiers returning, and the welcome home after Vietnam was anything but welcoming due to the war's unpopularity. How were you treated when you returned, and do you remember when you were diagnosed with PTSD, or were you not ever diagnosed?
Excuse me. When I got off the airplane in Philadelphia, in April 1969, and I got spit on, And they told us leaving California, you probably shouldn't wear a uniform. And I said, well, I earned it. I'm going to wear it. And of course, if somebody was going to do something, there was going to be an issue. But when I got spit on in Philadelphia, I just kept walking because I knew that it was not. I just gotten home. And the worst thing I wanted to do was go to jail as soon as I got home for clubbing somebody. And I just walked away from it. It kind of surprised me, but I did it. And what was your other question?
When you were diagnosed? Were you diagnosed?
Yeah, there was a a lady that works in our county veterans office has done everything for me. The director and I are friends, and I went down to see him one day, and I got to talking to her. And a friend of mine who is a Vietnam veteran said, you should go and talk to somebody because you have PTSD bad, because they know my story. And I finally got off my butt and I did it. And I went down and talked to her. They gave me 20% disability when I came home from Vietnam because of my wounds. And I said, okay, fine. I have my legs, hands, fingers, toes. There's guys that need that money more than me. And I just let it go, went on with my life, marriage, kids. And then this fellow said this to me, so I thought, and he said, there's that little tiny piece of the pie for you guys with the PTSD. So check it out. So I went from, she filled out paper, and the VA would send you a stack 2 inches. And there's only two papers that she had me sign, the rest went in the trash. In a week and a half, I went from 20% to 80%. Then I had to go down to Philadelphia VA and talk to a psychiatrist. And I went down there, I talked to him. I had to write down what was called my stressor. And the biggest stressor was August 21st. So I wrote about that. I had all the names of the guys. I carry in my wallet a list of the names, and I carry that every day. So I gave that to him. He read it, and he said, the first thing he said to me was, I'm here to help you, which really made a difference because of all the turmoil at the time, which I really respected. And we went through the whole thing, and probably a month later, I was raised to 100%. And then she said, we're going to go for a permanent total, unable to work. And that took 1 year. So, and I go to the VA a lot. They take care of my rheumatoid arthritis. But I go down and I talk to doctors down there about PTSD. Not too much anymore. I guess they figure I'm doing okay. So it's not very much anymore at all.
Has Kara's spotlighting of PTSD and her professional look at it, has it brought you two closer together? And I'd be interested to hear what you say too.
Sure. When she first did it and I first saw it, I needed a towel. At the time, I thought, I really didn't want that many people to know that much about me. But thinking about it over some time, if it can help one veteran, all's good. Who am I to stop something like that, to help another veteran? Because the PTSD, the guilt feeling, that's all okay. That's part of being in the military. That's part of being in a war.
What about you, Kara? Closer?
Absolutely.
He's made himself vulnerable to you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's funny that you say that you didn't want that many people to know that much about you, because you never seem to hesitate at all when I asked, which I think is incredibly...
Well, you're my daughter.
Yeah. I would have thrown a fit. But it is gracious of you, because it's not easy to open up about some of the worst and best times of your life, but also to be vulnerable about what PTSD has contributed to my life, to our family's lives. But I think it has, excuse me, I think it has brought us closer together. It's also brought my mom and I closer together, because I understand what she's also been dealing with. Living alongside of my dad for the past 48 years. She's been on this journey every single step of the way alongside of him. And I think my curiosity has allowed my sister and my brother to understand a little bit more. And I'm excited because this year or next year, my sister is finally going to come to a reunion and meet all the guys that my dad served with, which I don't think we would have done if I hadn't opened this door to it and just, asked all the really hard questions. So, Yeah, I think it's helped our family heal in a way that we didn't realize we needed.
The biggest thing that I didn't realize until I saw her video was what I did to my family. I had no clue, not a clue, because I thought I was always in the right, former sergeant, but I had no idea what I was doing to my family.
And you've forgiven yourself for that?
Kind of. It'll always be there.
Yeah. So talking about that horrible day, it's helped you. Has it taken it out of your head? And
no.
The power of the intensity lessened because you talk about it now?
Oh, sure. Yeah. In Kara's video, I talk about the noise level at the time. And you couldn't hear yourself think or talk. But meeting the guys now, when I go to the reunions and so forth, and last year I met a guy I haven't seen in 50 years.
This is the one in Odessa?
No, this was a fellow from, I think he was from Michigan, who he was wounded real bad. And we thought he was dead. And we put him on a helicopter, and the next thing I know, we got a hold of him. And through social media is how we're finding a lot of the guys. And it's really special to me to be able to see these men again. And,
but you saw him for the first time in Odessa.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Right,
yes.
That's where the last year's reunion mm-hmm. was. Is that where next year's will be also, or will you go somewhere else?
This year, the reunion, so that was a special reunion for the 50th anniversary of the battle. So that was separate from the reunions that they do every year, because that's with anybody who served in the 1st or the 5th during Vietnam. Well, actually anybody.
Yes.
Because they have younger vets come. They normally honor one younger vet who is still active duty.
Yes.
And they fly him and his family to the reunion and they applaud him.
Yep.
And I guess just ask him to hang out. Yeah.
If you'd like to speak, that's not a problem.
Yeah. And so this year it's going to be in Charleston, which my whole family's looking forward to, and hopefully my sister will be able to join this year, because to me it's also just really, really important that she and my brother and their families get to meet these guys too, because it's not easy to forget when older gentlemen come up to you and they say, "I want to shake the hand of the daughter of my hero."
Wow. So your visit here, sort of another step in your dad's healing there. I think they brought you here to talk to people about the suicide mm-hmm. epidemic amongst veterans. Kara, does that work need to intensify? And how do you foresee that happening?
So I haven't done a whole lot of work with veteran suicide. I know that it is a very big problem, and it should be a top priority of any type of veteran group and the military, the DOD. I think veteran suicide is an issue. Suicide against domestic abuse is also an issue. And I firmly believe that if the military understands that it takes 8 to 13 weeks to break you down and build you back up a soldier to enter, that when it's time for discharge, they take the same amount of time and care and intention to break you down from soldier and build you back up to civilian. Because when we talk, everybody has trauma. Military trauma is on a whole other level, but it's, everybody carries trauma. And the only way that you learn how to deal with this is by having tools in your toolbox. And if you're never given those tools and you're too scared to reach out, or you don't even know that the resources are there, you feel alone. And so I hope that anybody dealing with any issue, and if they're considering suicide, understands that the resources are there and the tools are out there. And it becomes a lot easier when you have the tools in your toolbox.
How do you feel when you hear him say, "I wanted to kill myself"?
I mean, that was actually something we've never talked about, but I mean, I guess I believe it, but I also feel like maybe that was at a time that was much earlier than when my family was around. I think thankfully, he made it to 1986 when he started, or 1984 when he started the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 210 in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. That's the core group of veterans that I was raised with. They've known me since I was in my mom's belly. And if it was not for those men and women to support my dad, but also to support my mom, I think that our story would be incredibly different. And it gave him a space to talk and be understood. It gave my mom a space to talk to the other women about how frustrating it is sometimes to live with and love a veteran. And it gave me a space to understand the sacrifice and the dedication of these men to their country, of these women to their men. And so I don't really know what to say to that, except I'm happy that he made it to a point where then he had the support. And I'm sure at some point, once he had a family of with three kids, that it just hopefully was a different, you know, it wasn't really an issue anymore. And it was like, all right, well, I can't, that's not an option. I got these kids to raise, so.
So any medications that have helped ameliorate your symptoms of PTSD? Antidepressants? Have you done any cognitive therapies like EMDR? That's called, it's eye movement desensitization reprogramming. None of that.
No.
Have you ever done therapy?
No.
Because I still think therapy would be great for him. Because even though, like, we are talking about PTSD and that the doctors are not talking to you about PTSD, he still has it. And it still comes out. And it's something that I don't live there anymore. I live in Washington, D.C. But sometimes my mom will, you know, text me and be like, your dad's in a mood today. And, like, I can't be around him. And, you know, that's not putting any undue blame on you. I mean, they've been married for 48 years. They get on each other's nerves. You know, I can't imagine being with somebody for that long. So, but it is, again, it's just like my mom every single day still deals with it. It's not something that, like, okay, the documentary is done, family's healed, all right, we're ready to take on the world. No, it's just a constant, everyday part of their lives. And I don't think I recognized that until when I was doing the documentary and I went out to El Centro, California, and I was talking to the family of Abe Cardenas and his eldest daughter. She is 50, so she was born when Abe was in Vietnam. And she was actually born 8 days after the Battle of Ben Cui. And so it's really incredible that he was able to go home and meet his daughter and then go on to have three more children. And when I talked to her about PTSD in her family, she made me really aware of the fact that, like, it still is an everyday thing for our mothers. And she said, I grew up, I got married at 20, I got out of the house, I started my own family. The same happened with her brother, it happened with her sister. And so we all left, and our moms are still living with the PTSD. And so I think it's really important for adult children to be supportive of the veteran, but also be able to support the spouse who is still living with it, because they both are experiencing it.
Tom, you know, this is, I'll also ask this of you. Do you have any bitterness surrounding how this trauma might have robbed you of a so-called normal post-service life?
I've thought about that. I don't think so. Obviously, it does a little bit with the anger, but I don't really think so. I came back, partied for a little while, and then I got a job. And I knew if I wanted to go buy a car, I'd have to have a job to get money to go buy a car. And I wanted a car. I used to build my own car, my little hot rods. But I don't think I don't feel that at all, especially anymore. 72 years old. I don't feel it anymore. I don't have any bitterness towards my enemy. I actually respect my enemy. They were very good soldiers. We flew over there in an airplane. They walked 1,500 miles to be in the area where I was. They were well trained, and we had some pretty good fights. But I have respect for them, absolutely.
It was the first unconventional war that Americans mm-hmm. were asked to serve in. You know, the jungles and the booby traps, and you know, some of that might have happened in Korea, but not to the extent that they were doing in Vietnam and Cambodia. Kara, any bitterness at all that part of your childhood was different because your dad had PTSD?
I don't think bitterness would be. I don't think bitterness would be the right term. I have a two-part answer for that. One is a little bit of a tangent, so totally feel free to cut this. But I'm doing this series about the future that I told you about, and there's a lot of studies of the brain and looking at trauma. And they're understanding that there is a way that they could take away your trauma. Basically, they could make you forget. And I don't know at what stage this research is in, but it made me immediately think of you, of my dad. And I think, would he want to forget? And there's no way in hell, I think, that you would want to forget, because as horrible as it was, it has shaped you as a person. And so, you know, I'm not bitter. Of course I wish that he didn't carry that trauma. Not only is it psychological, but it's physical. I mean, trauma, stress, it breaks down your body. And I wish that I didn't inherit some of the bad reactions to stressors, but I did. And I also inherited a sincere, genuine appreciation to people that have served. I, for whatever reason, like, what am I trying to say? It shaped me into who I am, and we all have flaws, but I think I'm a pretty good person. I'm empathetic. I mean, I hang out with a bunch of older people once a year for a whole weekend, and I just listen to them tell me stories, and I'm always like, God, nobody else my age does this. But it's like, I love storytelling, and I love capturing stories, and even though I'm not capturing their stories every time I go, I just appreciate that they're taking the time to tell me what it is that they've been through. And so I'm not bitter. Obviously, I wish life was easier sometimes, but I am incredibly happy for all of the values that comes from the challenges in life.
Tom, veteran suicide can be a result of PTSD. Mm-hmm. How can your experience navigating your life with this help soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan? And do you ever talk to groups of soldiers who come back?
I used to belong to a group that during the first Gulf War, that they would come back and we would sit in a group in a room and just talk. And we would ask them their experience, they would ask us ours. So that's most of it right there. I don't know what I could actually do other than, you know, tell the veterans, just find help. Because There's a quote that I read. I wish I'd have brought my iPad because I could read it to you about suicide. But when I belonged to the VVA 210 in Doylestown, we had some suicides in our group. And one of the fellows I went to high school with, most of them I went to high school with in the area. But and I talked about it this morning, where he was in the Marine Corps. He came home. He had a great job, beautiful wife, three great kids, beautiful house. And he came home and he put his Marine Corps uniform on and walked outside and shot himself. And we were good friends in school. And it was like, and even though I thought about the suicide, I always joked about that. Well, I'm not man enough to do that to myself. But I always, the main factor to me was I have, and this goes back to my being a sergeant, I have responsibilities. I have a wife and I have three kids I have to take care of. I have a job I have to go to every day, which I get up and went to my work every day. It was tough. So I don't know what I could actually do other than just tell veterans, don't sit at home, get out and find another veteran and sit down and talk.
Do you remember what that quote was?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, not when you have a sieve for a brain.
Is there anything that I haven't asked either of you that you think is crucial for me to know?
No, I just, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we could probably look up the quote really quickly if you want it.
Go ahead.
Okay. Suicide quotes.
No, it's I'm extremely proud of my service. I'm extremely proud of the men I served with. And it's just such a treat to have gotten involved with the organization again and meeting these guys. The biggest thing I found many years ago, I was looking for a medic who got hurt on July 26. He lives in Kaufman, Texas.
You remember the dates so
yes.
well.
And I was looking for him, and I got a hold of somebody here in Texas because everybody was Doc, no names. I had no clue what the guy's name was. So I got a hold of some folks down here, and I talked to one Vietnam veteran, and I explained, I said, I'm looking for this medic. He had beautiful blonde hair. He had a big blonde mustache, and I said he had the most beautiful pearly white teeth. And he said, that's David Shorten. He said, he lives in Kaufman, Texas. So I got on the phone. I dialed all the area codes in Texas, and the last one was Dallas. And he said, we have one David Shorten. He gave me the phone number. I was nervous for a couple days, and I finally called him. And his wife picked up the phone. I said, my name is Tom Frame. Served in Vietnam. I served with your husband. He was wounded on July 26. He's paralyzed from the waist down. And I said, I would like to talk to him if I could, if it's okay, because sometimes you get rejected. He said, sure. I said, he's just coming in on his wheel horse or something. And he gets on the phone. He goes, hello. And I said, Doc, how you doing? He goes, Sergeant Frame. The thing that doesn't change, everything else changes, except our voice. Our voices stayed exactly the same. So
amazing.
I said to him, I said, what do you do for a living? He goes, I fish.
And you love to fish too,
don't
you?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Did you find that quote?
I did. Power of Google. Can you read that? Do I need to make it bigger?
Oops. Can I cancel it?
Yeah.
Suicide doesn't end the chances of life getting worse. It eliminates the possibility of ever getting better.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Can I add one more thing?
Yeah, please.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry.
So, when my dad was answering the last question about younger veterans, I don't think he has any idea the impact he has had on the young veterans in his life. One being an in-law who, the wife is one of my really close friends. He served in Iraq. He came home, I want to say, in 2005, 2006. And he was dealing with PTSD. And my dad has been an advocate for him. And I think you always ask him how he's doing whenever you see him. My dad pushed him to go to the VA to get benefits. And I just saw him this past weekend, and he was just diagnosed with PTSD. And to him, he kind of knew that it was there, but the reasoning in his diagnosis, he was like, oh, I don't believe that. And his wife was like, yeah, this is exactly it. And so it's incredible to witness my dad being able to help these younger men and women, taking taking interest in how they're doing, pushing them to go to the VA, saying don't back down when they give you the 2-inch pile of paperwork. Do it because you deserve it. And even though you have all your legs, hands, fingers, toes, you still deserve it. And so I think that you do help people in enormous ways that I don't think you're aware of.
I have one more thing. We talk about the veterans and their battle with PTSD. In 1985, I saw an article in the paper written by Grace Moore. She was a nurse in the 12th Vac Hospital in 1968. She actually took care of our guys after August 21st. I can't do it.
No, you can.
She got to meet three of them. Because in Vietnam, when I came into the evac hospitals, they did what they had to, and out the door they went to Japan. And so they never got to recognize names and so forth and so on. And she only lives about 10 miles from where I do. And we see her all the time. And she's going to be coming. She always comes to our reunions, which I think is very, very special for these guys to meet her. And our battalion commander at the time was severely burned, and he was in the hospital, and he was all wrapped up, and they got mortared, and he's trying to bounce himself off the table while Grace was his nurse. And in Boston, and we had a reunion in Boston, and that's when I got to see them meet, which was really cool. So that's it. That's a wrap.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kara.
Thank you.